This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Wednesday, December 15th, 2021. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, we'll get a report back on last night's Boulder City Council meeting. Then we'll speak with an ice scientist about the rapidly shrinking Arapaho Glacier. After that, Chris Moore has his weekly commentary, Make Them Hear You. Then herbalist Brigitte Mars will bring us her regular Wednesday feature, Naturally. A BBC update and commentary from Jim Hightower are at the bottom of the hour. And then we'll hear from a panel of medical professionals about how hospitals and healthcare workers are faring ahead of the impending surge fueled by the Omicron variant. At 9:30, Uncle Jeff will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. That's all still ahead this morning after these news headlines with KGNU's Jamie Sudler.
The National Weather Service is forecasting very strong winds to hit Colorado today, including the metro area, and gusts could reach hurricane force as high as 100 miles per hour in the foothills. Almost the whole eastern part of the state will be under a high wind warning lasting until about 5 p.m. The winds result from a storm system moving in from the Pacific. The Boulder County Sheriff's Office said that Stage 1 fire restrictions are in place in western parts of the county, and no open burning is allowed in the eastern parts. Authorities ask residents to avoid any outdoor activities that could cause a spark because of dryness and the winds. The Sheriff's Department said that people should already have secured loose outdoor items like lawn furniture and holiday decorations. According to 9 News, Xcel Energy has staged workers in places to get electricity back on as quickly as possible in case winds cause power outages. Drivers should plan for delays and be prepared for obstacles on roads, blowing dust, and lower visibility. The state of Colorado passed a tragic milestone yesterday as more than 10,000 people have died in the state from COVID-19. State health officials said that the majority of those who are still succumbing to the disease are unvaccinated. However, those who have weakened immune systems from health conditions or their age are still dying, even if they have been inoculated. Almost 75% of Colorado's deaths in October were from those who are unvaccinated. The U.S. as a whole passed 800,000 deaths, with more occurring this year than in 2020. The virus conditions in the state do appear to be improving. Cases of positive tests and hospitalizations are dropping, but are still higher than they were during the first surge in the spring of last year. A spokesperson for Governor Jared Polis said in an email to Colorado Politics that it is now largely a pandemic of the unvaccinated who are at high risk of hospitalization from the virus. The Boulder City Council passed a new oil and gas regulation last night that will apply to the few areas in the city where development can be done. The Daily Camera reports that the new rules go into effect immediately and will be in place as the city's moratorium on oil and gas development ends this year. The Boulder County Commissioners heard an annual update last night about prairie dogs and its moratorium that prohibits extermination of the animals in certain areas for 3 months that starts in March. On March 1st, the Daily Camera reports that many residents said lifting the moratorium on lethal prairie dog control is well overdue. Officials discussed their hope to have the prohibition rescinded. If the moratorium is lifted, the county could use direct lethal control in areas that are determined not suitable for the animals at any time. Public comments on changes to the county's policy can be made starting today and will be presented to the Parks and Open Space Advisory Committee at the end of January. A lawsuit that challenged Colorado's new paid family and medical leave insurance program has been dismissed. The program was passed by voters in the 2020 election with 58% support and provides 12 weeks of leave funded from payroll contributions shared equally between employers and workers. The Grand Junction Daily Sentinel reports that the case was filed in July by a Mesa County construction company, partly owned by one of the county's commissioners, claiming that the new program was unconstitutional. But Judge Michael Martinez in Denver disagreed and ruled that the act is not subject to the Tabor Amendment because it is not an income tax law. The program is expected to raise about $1.3 billion a year to pay qualifying employees a portion of their wages for up to 12 weeks during family emergencies or medical needs. Some small businesses in Colorado will receive funding from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency to develop new technologies for public health and environmental problems. The agency announced that TDA Research in Wheat Ridge and Clean Robotics in Longmont are among 30 companies across the country that are using innovative approaches to sort waste, capture airborne bacteria and viruses, and map methane concentrations in large areas. As noted, the metro area will see heavy and dangerous winds today. The eastern part of the state is under a red flag warning until 5 p.m. due to the wind and low relative humidity. The warning means that critical fire conditions are occurring or will occur. The National Weather Service says that winds could gust at times up to 100 miles per hour in the foothills and up to 75 in the Denver metro area and may cause damage. There is also a 50% chance of blustery rain and snow showers today. Tonight it will be clear and breezy with a low around 25. Tomorrow, sunny with highs around 50 and still some wind, but not as fierce as today. Right now, it's about 42 in Boulder, 44 in Denver, and 29 in Fort Collins. For KGNU, I'm Jamie Sudler.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. Boulder City Council met for the final time of the year last night. Joining me for a recap is Shay Castle of Boulder Beat News. Good morning, Shay.
Good morning.
It's always nice to have you on for a recap. Start us off with the highlights from last night's meeting.
Well, you know, it was the last meeting of the year, and they try not to take on anything too big, so it wasn't super packed. But I think the highlights are that Boulder finally adopted some rules around fracking, should that ever happen in the city. Highly unlikely, but they've had a moratorium on oil and gas drilling for 8 years, so these new rules are the city's first and kind of a big deal. They also discussed changes to council engagement, which I think for the public matters because the way that you contact council is changing. You'll no longer be able to email the general council email that everyone's used to. Starting in January, they're going to do a form letter, which hopefully will improve the process and make it so that more people get responses from council and or staff. And those were the kind of two big events of the night. Everything else kind of came up somewhat spontaneously.
And we are currently under a high wind warning. You can see it right outside your window right now. It's going to be in effect until 5 p.m. today. And a cold front is also blowing through, bringing snow to the mountains. What plans are in effect to provide day shelter for the city's unhoused population?
There are no plans for day shelter for the unhoused population. That is something that Councilman Matt Benjamin brought up before last night. You know, what are we doing? These are incredibly strong winds, pretty analogous to, you know, a hurricane or a tornado level. And so there was a bit of discussion of that. The shelter does not have the capacity to remain open during the day due to staffing concerns. That's according to Kurt Fernhaber, the director of Housing and Human Services. And while there seemed to be some community interest from providers in opening up during the day, there weren't any solid plans for that. The one fallback that we have is if a weather emergency is declared, the Red Cross would set up something, but that would be after the fact. The City of Boulder's emergency management could also establish an emergency day shelter. But there, again, were no plans to do that. So if anything happens, it'll happen today, and remains to be seen how effective that would really be.
And this is not something like an earthquake that comes out of nowhere. Here in the news department, we've been aware that there is a very strong wind blowing in since yesterday. We've been sending out alerts to our listeners. How is it that on a night of a city council meeting, knowing that this is occurring, there's no plan in place?
You know, I don't know that that's something I can answer. The city says it has opened up emergency shelter for high wind events in the past. I've never seen that happen. Of course, it's possible that I just missed it, but you know, they've been pretty resistant every time council has asked, like, hey, what's our backup plan? Can we do more hotel rooms? They really always say no. It gets discussed as, yes, we're concerned about this, and yes, we're thinking about it, and we're talking about it, but there never is a plan. And then eventually, as happened last night, council has to move on. They have other stuff on the agenda. And, you know, as Councilwoman Nicole Spear said, I kind of want to, you know, plant my feet and keep talking about this, but we have other stuff to do on the agenda. And when you keep hearing no, there's only so much, I guess, they can push on that.
Well, one of the items that was covered last night, or one of the events that did occur last night, is there was a certificate of recognition given in honor or to commemorate the deaths of people who are unhoused and die in that condition. It seems a bit ironic, but can you talk about that?
Right. That's how we got into this discussion last night. So December 21st, which is it's next Tuesday at 4 p.m., Boulder will have an event at the Band Shell to honor and remember all the members of the unhoused community who died in 2021. This is a national event. It's the National Homeless Persons Memorial Day. So there are events in cities all across the country. And that's exactly what it is. There will be a list of the dead and some remembrance of what we know about those folks. And Jen Leibovich from Feet Forward and Scott Medina from Bridge House were on hand to accept that declaration. And as Jen said, you know, this is, I take no honor in this. Every year, more of my friends are dying. And why don't we do something like day shelter? She specifically asked for emergency day shelter to prevent these deaths. Also disclosure that I volunteer with Feet Forward. So I'd like readers to know that.
So where do people go just practically over the course of the day if they don't have a house?
Practically, the library has long been a place that they can go. They can go to businesses, you know, assuming that they can afford something to buy and that they don't get kicked out. There are technically, you know, some government offices open, but they're not really welcome there. Like the county courthouse downtown, they could nip into the bathroom facility on Pearl Street Mall. But all of these are places that are, they have staff that might ask folks to leave after a while. So realistically, I don't know where they go other than the library. And that's the big issue with not having a day shelter. There are very few options for folks.
And just quickly, in a few seconds, can you sum up why Boulder doesn't have a day shelter and what happened to the one that used to be open?
The day shelter closed when Boulder moved to the coordinated entry system and a housing first approach. And the answer that's been given ever since then, which was in 2017, is that it's very expensive to stand up a day shelter. And do we want to take money away from housing to do so?
Shay Castle of Boulder Beat News, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
The unusually dry winter has many Coloradans worried about our changing climate. Some are downright alarmed about the lack of snow. Ted Skambos is the senior research scientist at CU's Earth Science and Observation Department. He says, well, you shouldn't panic because of weather, which is highly variable. If you look at glaciers, well, the situation is pretty bad. Skambos recently took a group of students to collect samples and document the state of the Arapaho Glacier outside of Boulder. KGNU's Alexis Kenyon talked with Skambos by phone from a field station where he is conducting research in Antarctica, hence the choppy audio.
To start, tell me about the Arapaho Glacier. Is it still there?
Well, there's still an ice pack on Arapaho Glacier. There's still an ice pack at the uppermost end of Arapaho Glacier, but it's a remnant of when it could actually be called a glacier because it's been rapidly wasting away during the warming period that we've had for the last several decades. So it can't really be called a glacier anymore. It's an ice field. But most of the glaciers on Earth have been retreating rapidly, and much like the rest of the world, Colorado's glaciers are all, many of them, most of them, completely gone.
How far is the Arapaho Glacier from Boulder? And do you think that most people realize that there's something like that so close?
maybe they don't, but if you drive westward on Arapaho from Lafayette, just look up and you'll see a white patch almost lined up just barely to the north of the line of the road. So if you crush that hill coming into Boulder and you see that beautiful view of the Indian Peak, look for the white bucket that's sitting there even into July and August, the last place where the snow hangs out. That's the Arapaho Glacier.
Can you tell me about witnessing this decline? Was there a point when you realized that, you know, the melting of this glacier was really accelerating?
Sure. This last trip in 2021, the retreat has been quite dramatic. There's almost no place to stand and work on the glacier anymore because it's so steep. And we hiked up there in the late 90s, but it had a flat area on top as the snow accumulated and began to flow downhill. So when we went there in September and tried to climb up onto it, we did get up onto it, but there's almost no flat area to walk on anymore. It's just a curtain of ice hanging off of the cliff below South Arapaho Peak, basically.
Is this just an inevitable life cycle of a glacier? Or how do we contextualize this?
Yeah. What's happening now is a much more rapid warming than most of the past climate changes. And in fact, because we're seeing this change happen in just a few decades rather than a few centuries, well, we're seeing the kinds of changes that we see in Colorado and all over the world with dramatic impacts on weather and water resources, things like that.
Why are you interested or concerned in these glaciers melting? And why would other people care about this? A glacier going away. I mean, what's the...
Yeah.
Yeah.
What does it matter?
Yeah, what does it matter?
Yeah, you know, I study all over the world, especially Greenland and Antarctica, where I am right now. But Colorado also is home to ice and glaciers, and this climate warming and the impacts on ice, they come right back to essentially my backyard, my county. It's a way of bringing the science home to all of us, and it's a way of witnessing everybody in Boulder County witnessing climate change right before their eyes. As I said, I've hiked up to this glacier for the last 25 years, three or four times, and it's visible. You can easily see that the glacier is staggering under the impact of very warm summers and a lot of melting, a lot of dust in the air also. So it's changed just in a very short period of time. And the landscape for Colorado is changing in that short time frame as well. So you might think, oh, you know, summers come and summers go. Sometimes they're hot. Sometimes winters are snowy. Sometimes not. The glacier is telling us things are not the way they used to be. They're, you know, warmer and there's less snow staying through the summer months. So hopefully we got a good snowfall this year and lots of water in the reservoirs. The Arapaho Glacier, though, on average is probably, I don't see how it won't continue to retreat until it's gone. And that'll be a change in the landscape for Colorado.
Ted Skambos is the senior researcher at CU's Department of Environment and Observational Studies. He joined us from Antarctica, where he's conducting field research at McMurdo Station. Ted, thank you for making time to talk to me.
Well, thanks very much. This is great. And I hope it makes an impact. Tells people that climate change isn't something that's happening to others. It's happening right here to us, too.
We go now to Chris Moore's weekly commentary, Make Them Hear You.
Make them hear you. Make them hear you.
This is Make Them Hear You with ideas how you can have your voice heard before Congress. On December 8th, the Denver Post printed an op-ed from Representative Diana DeGette that merits review here. While Representative Lauren Boebert gets huge media coverage for fundraising stunts like strapping rifles onto her school-aged children in a Christmas card or facing the loss of committee assignments for her anti-Muslim rhetoric, All the other members of Colorado's congressional delegation are working across the aisle to get good things done for the American people. Democrat Jason Crow and Republican Mike Waltz of Florida put forth a plan to help frontline healthcare workers. Republican Ken Buck and California Democrat Zoe Lofgren submitted a bill that would prevent large corporations from venue shopping to get the best deal in the bankruptcy court of their own choosing. Democrat Ed Perlmutter and Minnesota Republican Tom Emmer created a bipartisan proposal to protect credit unions, which help smaller communities. Lauren Boebert never does this kind of hard work across the aisle, but she gets the lion's share of the media attention, while congresspeople who put forward promising bipartisan bills fly almost completely under the radar. I put this weekly show on where I research bills that are being floated in Congress, and even I was unaware of several of these bills. I was, however, aware of Diana DeGette's bipartisan Cures 2.0 bill, which she introduced alongside her Republican colleague from Michigan, Fred Upton. The legislation would also create a federal research agency for health, dubbed the Advanced Research Projects Agency for Health, changing how Medicare would cover new treatments and make them available sooner. It would increase access to telehealth services for Medicare and Medicaid patients, including those covered under the Children's Health Insurance Program, known as CHIP, to ensure more Americans are getting the help they need when they need it. It would provide training and educational programs for at-home caregivers, including family members with no prior health care experience, to help them better care for loved ones when they're home. It would require more diversity in clinical trials to ensure any new drugs and treatments approved for use in the U.S. are both safe and effective for a greater and more representative portion of the population. Finally, it would provide patients more information about the illness they face and the treatment options available to them to make them a more integral part of the decision-making process. If you have thoughts on bipartisanship in general or the Cures 2.0 bill co-sponsored by Diana DeGette and Republican Fred Upton, you can contact your congressperson. This is Chris Moore with Make Them Hear You.
It's now time to check in with herbalist Brigitte Mars, who brings us her weekly episode of Naturally.
Greetings. Welcome to Naturally. This is Brigitte Mars to talk about something many of us deal with this time of year, and that is dry skin. I heard the towels are one of the leading causes of dry skin. That's just sort of the joke. Anyways, we always need to remember that our skin is really nourished from what goes inside our body. So things like drinking more water, using good quality fats, like making our own salad dressing. And avocados are a great source of natural fats. Don't worry about how many calories they are, because there's also an enzyme in there called lipase that helps to digest fats. We can also eat foods that help to strengthen our skin, like winter squash, sweet potatoes, carrots, and eating vegetables with the skin on. Now, this time of the year, when most people have the heat on, that can be very dehydrating. So you may want to get a humidifier. If you have a wood stove, think about putting a pot of water on the stove. This is a great way to diffuse some essential oils. You might want to add some fir or pine or spruce essential oil and make the home just smell delightful while you're supporting your lungs. The best time to apply a moisturizer is right when you've gotten out of the tub and you're a bit moist, or out of the shower. So put the moisturizer on, and I have found that using moisturizers that contain petroleum or petroleum-based products, petrolatum, are not really something our skin does that well with. So I would look for more natural products that are using things like coconut oil, grapeseed oil, almond oil. We do absorb about 60% of what we put on our skin. So yeah, you better be able to pronounce most of those ingredients. There's also some herbs that have a moisturizing effect. So of course, besides drinking more water, we could be drinking some herbal teas that contain mucilage, or a lubricating quality. Marshmallow root, linden flower are two of the really moisturizing herbs that I think of. And when you go to bed at night and you have the heat on all night, that's sort of like being in a dehydrator. So get cozy with a lot of blankets, warm up the bedroom, and then before it's time to actually go to sleep, turn the heat way down. Not only will you save energy, save your skin, but you also save on those heating bills, which do seem to get high. Thanks for joining me on Naturally. This is Brigitte Mars.
That's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. Special thanks to Jamie Sudler, Shay Castle, Alexis Kenyon, Chris Moore, and Brigitte Mars for their contributions to today's program. I've been your host, Shannon Young. A reminder that if you'd like to share a comment with KGNU, call us at 303-447-9911. We play the messages back on Tuesday mornings at 8:25 during the Morning Magazine. Stay tuned for the latest commentary from Jim Hightower, then a media briefing on hospital preparedness for the Omicron variant surge, hosted by Sideline. But first, these news headlines from the BBC.